verse 15, do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. Raise your hand if you've ever read that verse and been greatly encouraged by that. Okay, I see three hands. I'm going to assume everybody else is thinking the same thing. We do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Verse 16. Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Do you know what verse 12 teaches us? Verse 12 teaches us that the word of God, that God himself is perceptive enough to know this, or to search within the thoughts and intents of your hearts, to know what you think about doing and what you plan to do. He knows where that dividing line is. But lest we become overburdened with care, overburdened with neuroticism and trying to micromanage every aspect of our life to the point that it becomes sinful. Keep in mind verse 15. We have a great high priest who can sympathize with our weaknesses, who knows exactly what it feels like to be in your shoes, who knows exactly what it feels like to struggle with temptations, who knows exactly what it feels like to wake up in the morning, to see your friend die, and knows exactly what it feels like to face trials in your life. And so lest we fall victim to the thought that God is up there in heaven and has no clue what we're going through right now, keep in mind Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15, that we have a great high priest who sympathizes with our weaknesses. There's a difference between sympathy and empathy, wouldn't you agree? Sympathy is simply knowing what somebody is going through. Empathy is feeling that pain with them. And so when 1 John teaches us that we have an advocate with the Father, is trying to search for the right word. When we have an advocate with the Father, what we have is a representative in heaven that knows intimately what it feels like to be you. And doesn't everybody want a lawyer on their side that knows what it's like to be you? I would encourage you to go to 1 Timothy or 1 Peter chapter 5. Flip over there also. 1 Peter chapter 5. This is another one of those verses and those passages that I think goes very well when it's split at least a little bit in two. 1 Peter chapter 5, starting in verse 6, this three-verse section probably has been memorized by most people when they were a kid, at least in two different parts. 1 Peter chapter 5, starting in verse 6, listen to what he has to say here. He says, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Now, if you just take those two verses by itself, that itself is a very encouraging verse for all of us. But listen to how Peter, who is speaking to very persecuted type people, listen to how he continues this thought. Listen to what he says in verse 8. Be of sober spirit. And this isn't just a blanket separation. This is all one thought. Be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. For your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, sorry, I can't pronounce that, seeking someone to devour. What verse 8 teaches us should be terrifying in the same way that Hebrews 4 was about. It should be terrifying to know that Satan is walking about looking to see whom he can devour. And he's not worried about the world. Those of you who are wondering, well, Satan's just after those people who are in bars, those people who are in brothels, those people who are gambling. Satan's already got those people. When this says that Satan is walking about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour, you can picture in your mind Satan standing right here, walking down the aisle, looking at each one of your souls, and thinking to yourself, can I get him? Can I get her? I know I can get them. I'm not pointing anybody in specific. I know I can get him. I know I can get her. But he's looking to see whom he can devour. But when you put verses 6 through 7 on top of that, it paints a whole different picture. Look at that again. When he says here in verses 6 through 7, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him because he cares for you, that plays into a much bigger picture. Because what Peter is teaching us through verses 6 through 7 on top of verse 8 is the people that Satan is looking to devour are those people who are overwhelmed with anxiety, those people who are so concerned with the things of this world, who have their minds so set on things of a temporal nature that they don't have any viewpoint towards the things of God at all. Eternality just has no concept in their mind. And those people who are concerned so much, and we talked about that a little bit with contentment yesterday morning, but those people who are so concerned with things of this world, Satan is looking right at them. Because he knows that all he has to do is play to that anxiety just a little bit. tweak things just a little bit in your concern level, and he knows, I can't snap with that finger, he knows he's got you. That's a little bit better. He knows that he's got you. You know the cure for anxiety? You know the cure for concern? You know the cure for spiritual warfare against Satan? It's there in verse 6. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. When we elevate Jesus' humanity to the same level that we exalt his deity, and both of those should be exalted equally, when we think about Jesus' humanity and the fact that we have a high priest who can sympathize with our weaknesses, then what that means is when we get down on our knees to pray and we pour our heart out to him and we lay all our concerns about everything, and God has never once spoken out against praying too much. He doesn't have a long-distance bill that he has to pay for. But when you get down on your knees, and when I got down on my knees and emptied my heart and concern for us, you know what that means? John chapter 11, verse 35, that he weeps for you. That Lazarus wasn't his only friend. That Lazarus wasn't the only person and the only being that he ever cared about in this life. And that when you empty your heart out before him and cast your anxiety on him and put him as Lord of your life and give your soul over to him, he cares for you. And he weeps for you. And he understands what it's like to be you. We also, on top of this, not only have a high priest who can sympathize with us, we also don't have a high priest who keeps us at arm's length. We oftentimes talk about what was that maybe made Jesus so popular in that time period. And certainly we can look at any number of things as to why Jesus was so popular when he was on earth. 3.5 years, and he literally shook Judea upside down. And we can